You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome to the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all across the country. And a lot of you that are watching this want to do more aesthetic dentistry, and I've got the guy who's going to show us how to do this. I got my friend, Dr. Jason Litsky on here, and he's got one of the keys to make it happen. So you don't want to miss this. Do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. We'll see you in a second.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. I am so pumped to have you here. And again, we're just having so much fun doing these. I get requests all the time for different items that you guys want to see on the show. And today is no exception because I've had this request a lot and I've been trying to get this guy on the show for a while, but I couldn't get him booked until now. So I'm super grateful to have him, and I'm going to talk to you about him in just a second. But we're shooting this live on Facebook. So if you're watching this during the live feed, please ask any questions that come up because I'm going to ask the expert, Jason himself, and I'm going to try to get him to answer the question. And also, too, we love the questions so much. We actually have implemented Gratitude Mondays where we're just giving away an Apple iWatch for all of the single best question we get any week on any post because I love the questions, and two free tickets to Activate, which is our practice growth seminar. So check it out. And I'm going to talk about this guy for a little bit because I've wanted to get him on the show for a while. And he's one of those superstars, up and coming rising superstars that you're everywhere, Jason. I mean, some of the things that you do are amazing. Like, you're teaching everywhere. You've got these mastery courses. You're truly embracing marketing in a very unique way and positioned really well. And you do the aesthetic, restorative, and the occlusal functional thing all together. And I just want to start taking this apart because a lot of the people that are watching this really want to do the stuff that they've been trained to do, but they get stuck. And so today we're going to be talking about getting them unstuck. And I'm just so grateful you're on. And for those people that don't know who Jason Olitsky is, who is Jason Olitsky? Who are you?
I'm a dentist. You know, I've had my own practice here for just about 11 years. And when I opened up my practice, I decided I wanted to be aesthetic dentistry. So I have a practice that focuses mainly on aesthetic dentistry. I have two children. I have a 5-year-old and 8-year-old, 5-year-old girl, 8-year-old boy. And they take up a lot of my time, man. They're awesome and a lot of fun at the same time. High energy kids. You know, I don't have the kids that just like sit there and just like don't want to do anything. My kids are very active. So I think they get it from the parents. So I'm hanging with the kids a lot. Beyond that, I spend a lot of time with my wife. We live very close to the beach. So we spend a lot of time on the beach. I like to surf. I play for a soccer team. I play a couple times a week. So I stay pretty active. I go to the gym and I travel around for lecturing too. And so, it's all about the balance of everything, but I like to stay busy.
So. Yeah. And you wrote a book. I'm going to talk about your book in a little bit. One of the things that you do is you work hard at this, though, because sometimes people watch you and they're like, oh, he's just got it made. Like, he just walked into it. You didn't walk into it. You've been very intentional about the direction you wanted to practice, and you work hard. I mean, we were even joking what you did today. Like, you don't have like these perfect days where people just come in and they just go, sign me up. You don't have those, do you?
No. Well, no. Occasionally when that happens, it's such like what breath of fresh air. No, you know, it's work, you know, getting to be able to do a lot of aesthetic dentistry. I mean, it's always been work to try and get better at it and, you know, have your failures and learn from those failures and just kind of get back on that bike and keep going. You know, there's a big difference. Like my son, you know, when he started to learn how to ride a bike, he was 4 or 5 years old. We put him on the bike and he rode a little bit and he fell and he scratched up his knee and he was bleeding and he screamed bloody murder. You know, and he would not get back on that bike for 2 years. It took him like 2 years to get back on the bike. Finally got him to do it. It was amazing. But my daughter, you know, she is 4 years old. We put her on a bike. She can't even reach the ground. She hits a couple trash cans. She puts her bike back up. I push her. She goes. She learns how to ride a bike that day. I mean, so if you're like my daughter and you're going to hit some trash cans and keep going, you're going to learn how to ride that bike faster. But if you're like my son and something happens and the case doesn't seat right or properly and you don't want to do aesthetic dentistry anymore, it's going to take you a while to get comfortable doing aesthetic dentistry. And so I think for me, it's just been like, well, I hit a trash can and I'm just going to keep on going, you know, and just kind of learn from the mistakes. And so there's been plenty of them. So hard work.
Hard work. And I will say this, you're a great student of the game. Like, you know, you see this in athletes too. There are athletes that are just great students of the game. And that's one thing you've done really, really well. And you're always up in your game. So, you know, you and I talked about this too. And I believe this for a long time. I think as a restorative or aesthetic dentist, you can only get so far and then you're stuck. Like, you're just stuck and you realize you've got to break through. And when we were talking about this before and even before the show, you're like, hey, there's one key that helps you do more aesthetic dentistry. What is it?
There is one key, because you're going to sit through, you know, 4-hour lectures on aesthetic dentistry. You're going to learn a lot of details. You're going to learn how thick the veneers are supposed to be, what types of cements you're going to use, the best types of bonding agents, a lot of materials. But at the end of the day, those details can only get you so far. Ultimately, you need to be able to present your dentistry in a way that enables you to do more of what you're trying to do, more of what you love to do. And if it's aesthetic dentistry, the key component to being able to do more of it is getting really good at your photography and getting good at your video to be able to present your cases to your patients.
Yeah. And you're doing all of it. So you have live video feeds going in your ops, and I'm watching it too. And I'm like, wow, that is so good. And if I'm a young dentist watching this, Jason, just, you know, I want you to speak to this. Like, I'm a 32-year-old dentist, I'm like, Jason, you're really good at it. Where'd you start? You know, and we're not talking about just intraoral photography. Let's just go to the basics and then go into the mastery component. So help us with the basic elements of this. Where would you start?
Okay. Well, if you start where I started, I had a point and shoot camera. You know, I got my first point and shoot camera so I could shade match with the laboratory and I could take a picture of a single central incisor and wonder why the shade wasn't coming back right from the laboratory. And I outgrew that kind of quickly because I wanted to be able to shoot consistent magnification ratios and be able to take those really nicer pictures to be able to compare it to other dentists and to be able to show patients. And to do that, I need to get a digital SLR camera, which is like the bigger camera with the lens that attaches on top. And if you want to learn how to do that, then, you know, that's a whole nother step. But I'll tell you what, I mean, there's not a whole lot of really good cosmetic dentists out there who can't use a digital SLR camera. If you want to get good at cosmetic dentistry, they go hand in hand. I mean, you really have to know how to use that digital SLR camera. So it's nice to get the point and shoot. It's easy to use. I mean, you can use your iPhone. You know, you can use a simple point and shoot camera, which is like a consumer grade camera. But at the end of the day, you got to take the step to digital SLR.
Right. Now, everybody's going to ask this, what camera are you using now? Because everybody loves the Canon.
I know.
So what do you use now and compared to what you started with?
So now I use the Canon 80D and I have a 5D Mark III. So those are two different Canon cameras I have. But I would tell somebody, if they're into the gadgets, they say, what camera should I get right now? You know, I'm just getting into digital SLR photography. I would say, if you're a Canon shooter, get the 80D. Or if you're a Nikon shooter, get a D7200. That's a semi-professional camera. It's not the introductory digital SLR camera that's kind of plasticky in the body. You might outgrow that camera faster than you'd outgrow the two cameras that I talked about.
Right.
And there's a functionality about that camera you don't get with a basic camera, in that you have consumer settings or custom settings or user settings on those.
Right.
So you can set the camera where it needs to be on these different settings on the mode dial. And when you go to those settings, it's automatically set for you. you don't have to think about what to change.
Right.
So if I say U1 for clinical views, you put it on U1 on the mode dial and it's clinical view. If somebody picks it up, you know, your hygienist grabs it, takes a picture, she changes some settings, it's just put it on U1 and you'll be right in the settings. So that's kind of a nice feature of some of those cameras as well.
Yeah. And I'm going to speak to that because I'm terrible at everything, but I have the 5D Mark III and I just set it to the green setting. and people always comment, they're like, dude, your photos are so good. You're so good at this. I'm like, I'm really not. This thing does all the work. Cause really when you get the photos back, they're freaking gorgeous. I mean, they're gorgeous. So, and it, what's more important than the actual equipment, cause I want to get away from this. You know, everybody thinks that a gadget will fix everything. You have to get good at what you're thinking. Now there's a lot of myths around photography and I want you to debunk those and let's go right into it and even talk about video a little bit too.
Okay. Functionally, you want to get good at shooting pictures. You got to understand that you have to have a high f-stop. Right. So in photography, in clinical photography, you have to have a high f-stop, 22 or higher for Canon, 32 or higher for Nikon. But that gives you the deep depth of field that you're looking for so that if you take a picture, all the teeth are in focus. That's really the number one thing that I see that dentists are doing wrong when they finally get their camera is they're not switching their camera to a higher f-stop. That constricts the aperture and gives you a deep depth of field. When you're taking your camera out, your Mark III, and you're shooting pictures out and putting on the green box of death, which is automatic.
Sorry, that's all I know, man. Sorry. Yeah.
It's probably picking a shallow depth of field for you. So when you take a picture of somebody's face, it's blurring the background and giving you a nice portrait setting, but you just don't want that in clinical views. So you got to make sure that you take it off that setting and put it on another setting so that you get a higher f-stop. Right. Yeah. So.
And so I want to take this apart too, because one of the things that you and I both agree on and very hot topic is predictability. Like, because we can talk about the aesthetics and all that, but there's an element that's an underlying element that has to be there when you're doing photography and everything. The predictability keeps you happy, keeps you sane, keeps you confident. So tell me more what predictability means to you in your practice.
With predictability, if you don't want to be very nervous, you know, especially when it comes time for the patient to come get their veneer seated, you know, you're nervous, the patient's nervous. Like, it shouldn't be at that moment when somebody gets their new smile, there should be no apprehension. Okay. If you were at this moment and there's apprehension, then we haven't been going through the steps of predictability to get there. For me, there's a lot of times when things that are unpredictable are good. Unpredictability is good in like the movies. Or predictability is bad in the movies, right? Because you don't want to be like sitting through a movie and you get to the end of it and you say, that was predictable.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like the movie, The Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm. Like you sit down The Sixth Sense, you get to the end of the movie. Like, I don't want to do a spoiler alert because I can't like do a poll of like the crowd, you know, to see who's watched that movie. But if you watch the movie, you know, at the end, like that guy, you know, you did not know that guy was, you know, I can't really say it because it's a spoiler alert, but you know, that was a big shock. So, you know, predictability is bad in the movies. But when you get to the time of seating the veneers, you know, and you go to seat the veneers and the patient looks in the mirror for the first time and he looks at it and he goes like, oh my gosh, look at my, what did you do to me? They're horrible. You know, that's unpredictability. That's bad in dentistry, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to do the steps of predictability. And I think the first crucial step in predictability is getting really good pictures, preoperative pictures of your patient. And being able to sit down with them during a consultation and share with them those areas that you can improve. And those areas that you'll have some compromises when you're finished. And if you could point out the areas that where there might be compromise when you're finished, then it starts you out in the right direction. For me, like when I first started doing aesthetic dentistry, I didn't want to talk about the compromises of the treatment in the beginning, because you're feeling like if it's something that you want to do, if you talk too much about the compromises, then you might be like talking the patient out of it. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, so it's kind of like a mixed feeling for you. But in the end of the day, this feeling that the patient has to move forward, that they're so excited to get their smile, you know, improved by you, they really appreciate the fact that you're discussing with them areas that could be a compromise in the beginning. And it feels good at the end. It feels good that you spoke with them about the periodontist, you spoke with them about the orthodontist, you told them the areas that would be a compromise if they didn't go forward with the specialist before you start. That way they can make an educated decision. And then when you get to the end and you show them their smile, there's not as much backpedaling where you say, oh, well, you could have went to the orthodontist, or maybe you should have seen the periodontist or things like that. So,
right. Yeah. And I'm sure you look at the research as information goes through people's eyes and how it connects with their brains so much. I don't know how you could be a dentist nowadays and not do photography. I just don't know how you could do that. I mean, even in your lab communication, what you teach about your lab is brilliant, because you're minimizing errors, because we're all on the same page. You, the patient, the lab, everybody that's on the same team as far as what's going to happen here in the future.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing with from the point of showing patients pictures, then we can show those pictures with the laboratory. We can be more of smile designers. I think that, you know, it's easy to just talk to somebody, take some impressions, send it to the lab and say, please wax up 6 through 11 porcelain veneers. But I don't feel like we're doing our job as cosmetic dentists. I feel like as cosmetic dentists, we're more like architects, you know, for the smiles. We're more like architects who build homes. And so if you decide you want to build a new house, you would, the first person you'd meet with would be the architect, not the contractor, right? You want to meet the architect because maybe you pick the architect, you've seen some of the homes that they've built, you've gotten a good referral, and you say, I want a home like that one. So you go see the architect. But you would expect the architect to help you design the house. I mean, you don't want the architect just to say, okay, contractor, come build this house. You know, you go to them and you say, I want a 3-2, you know, and they build a 3-2 for you, but you didn't give you any details about the house.
Yeah.
And so I feel like we're a little bit more of an architect. So we can't just like pass the buck right away to the contractor. So that's the idea of like getting the expectations out of the patient, figuring out what they want and what you can do, because we're not really building a new house. It's more like a remodel.
Right.
And so we need to be able to communicate where the limitations may be in the remodel so that when we talk to the contractor, we hire the right one for the job and then they can build the house that we want.
You know, absolutely. So. Yeah. Let's start with the basic blocking and tackling on photography, because I get this question all the time. I'm sure you do too. Now, first of all, do you take them on every patient? And then are you asking patients, would you mind if we take, like, that's a good question. And then are you getting them to sign the release? Because these questions come up, believe it or not. Some dentists are a little cautious. They're like, do you mind? What's your philosophy on that as far as patients coming in your office and photography and its role in the new patient process?
Yes. So if you came into my office right now, you would see that one of my treatment rooms is a photo studio. And a lot of treatment rooms have 12 o'clock walls, you know, where there's two entrance ways. So for my studio, I took down the 12 o'clock wall. So it's just a big open space with studio lights.
Wow.
And so for every patient that walks into this practice, they're walking by a treatment room that has like these nice studio lights.
Okay.
And so it's not like necessarily a conversation starter, but it's something people see, and it's an expectation around here that that's a room that we go in to analyze people's smiles. Every patient that comes into the office goes into that studio at their first appointment, every patient. So every new patient gets new patient pictures in there, and especially for consultations, since most of what I do is aesthetic dentistry. So like 80% of my new patients that call are for aesthetic dentistry. Those patients in particular go to the photo studio.
Okay.
So we'll have a conversation in the consultation room where we talk about, you know, their feelings about their smile, how long they've been thinking about it. You know, there's some real key questions to ask somebody, you know, to get them to really start thinking about their smile on an emotional level. We'll touch base with that, but then we'll go to the photo studio and we'll take the specific pictures that we need to take for that case. And then we'll go back to another office where I have a big screen TV on my wall, and I plug the CF card right there into the computer, and the pictures come up real big on the TV, and we just kind of start going through the pictures and talking about those things we can improve for them. So every patient gets it. Now, the first day a patient comes into my practice, they get a model release here.
Okay.
So it's a full blanket model release. It includes HIPAA, and most patients assign it, not even ask questions about it. There are patients who see it and they have questions about why they need to sign it. And so we let them know that we may want to share them with lecturers. We may want to share them with other patients in the practice. We may want to share them with the laboratory. And so the patients may say, well, I'm okay with the lab, but I'm not okay with you putting it on your website.
Right.
You know, so specific notes we'll make on that patient that they don't want to have that shared on social media, or it may say smile only, or it may say just the lab or lectures good, but not, you know, not website. So there may be some specific guidelines for each patient, but I'll let you know that even though most people sign a model release, no problem, I'll tell you that even though they do, if you're planning on putting it on social media, if you're planning on putting it on Facebook or Instagram or on your website or putting it in a book, I would say just reach out to them one more time and tell them what you plan on doing. Legally, you're protected. Maybe legally you're protected, but nothing's worth upsetting a patient. So and we've had it happen a couple of times. So that's how I know. That's why I would say that.
That is really good advice, because most of this is emotionally driven anyway. It's not logic. Now, I do get this question too. What if patient says no to any photos? What do you say? Like, and does it happen a lot in your office? Probably not, or does it?
It doesn't happen a lot. I mean, everybody's let me take their pictures, at least for laboratory communication. Nobody said no, you know, so.
And then the other question comes up, are you taking all the photos? How many photos would you take in a new patient process? Because you see people that are struggling, and then do you take all of them? Do you have a team member that takes all of them? Do you take the aesthetic shots? Like, these are questions we get, so I'm just curious.
Yeah, so I mean, seriously, like, I might be a little bit different, but I take all my pictures in the practice. unless I'm totally tied up, you know, and somebody else can take them. I should say my hygienist would get mad at me. I mean, she takes her own patients, new patient pictures in the studio, not me.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, she'd get mad at me for that one. No, she takes the pictures, man. But I take the pictures of the new patients I see first, like the consultations.
Yeah.
For me, you know, I do a consultation in a room first, but then that consultation continues in a photo studio. You know, we're still having that conversation. And when you're asking somebody to sit in what I call the hot seat, you know, the worst seat in the house, you know, and they're uncomfortable smiling, I'm talking a little bit more about that, you know, that feeling that they're having.
Right.
And I get the right pictures. You know, if we're talking about incisal edge lengths, or we're talking about buccal corridor, or we're talking about a crossbite, you know, I make sure I get those specific pictures that I need for the consultation.
Right.
And nowadays I'm doing more video too. So I flick on the video and we do a little bit of video of them talking, smiling, laughing. And then we look at those things too. So
yeah.
I like to take the pictures. So, oh, what pictures do I take? I take a real abbreviated series for new patients. Our new patients get a full face. They get a smile. They get retracted teeth together and retracted teeth apart. And we usually just do the occlusal views with an intraoral camera in the treatment room.
Okay.
So for new patients. And it's a similar set of series for the consultations that I see. You know,
right.
I may take more like a one-to-one or something like that for consultations, but it's similar series.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is just good practice for a lot of different reasons. Number one, you can see your skills progress over time. It's really good to show patients how conditions change over time. Mm-hmm. So it's less about the selling of dentistry or anything like that. It's just a really good protocol. And Crystal just put a great comment here. It's part of a protocol. It just becomes a standard of care that you have in your office. Also, too, you're accredited with the AACD, right? You went through that whole process,
right.
which you can speak to. That's not easy. Is that like a piece of cake?
No, it's really time consuming. I'm starting to work on the fellowship process.
Yes. Okay.
And so that's 50 cases. And so I thought accreditation of 5 was hard, you know, now I'm looking at the 50 case. I'm like 50 cases of the same criteria as the first 5 where they judge them to the same degree. That's going to take a while.
That's intense.
So, yeah.
And how important is photography to this whole thing? It's the cornerstone, isn't it?
It's the cornerstone. Yeah. You get your deductions for your photography, but ultimately I realized you needed the photography to be able to see what you're doing.
Right.
Now you use photography to communicate with a lot of people, the patients, the specialists, for marketing purposes and things like that. But ultimately you need those pictures to communicate with yourself to be able to see the areas where you can improve. Because when you're seeing a case, when you get your eyes on it, you think everything's great because it went in right. But if you look at your pictures, you'll see that the shade match wasn't quite right. You'll see that the buccal corridor wasn't out far enough on one side. You'll see the case was canted. I mean, the evaluation of the pictures to me, if you don't take pictures and look at them, it's like being like a composer and like composing music. And when you're done, like never listening to it, like that just to me doesn't make any sense. Like, how do you get better like that? So you gotta look at your art when you're finished with it.
Right. Absolutely. Sure. And I got to ask you this because you're passionate about this, the future of photography, where do you see this going? Cause there's a lot going on right now and you've got your hands around where the future's going. Where do you think it's going?
Dude, it's crazy how much photography's changed in just a year since I started really getting into the photography. I mean, it used to just be about documentation. So, I mean, you get a ring flash, you take your pictures, and it's just getting correct exposure and accurate depth of field was just like the best photography had to offer.
Right.
But even more recently, what you see is that photography's become even more about presentation than anything else. I mean, if you look at relevant lecturers today, their photos are so good, you know, they stand out, and it's almost as if you don't have really spectacular pictures in your lectures that you are behind the times, yet you're presenting old material. And it's almost as much as your pictures are as important as your learning objectives, I think for lecturing today. So it's really, that's important.
Yeah.
So no, it's incredible when you really get into the photography and then you like, you buy somebody's book or something, you know, like Iñaki Gamborina, like you look at his book and he's been putting together, you know, these cases for so long and you're looking at all these pictures. You're like, you mean he's got all these pictures, all these years he's been taking and the lighting is incredible. And it's like the amount of work that goes into that. So it just puts a level of expectation on your work,
right.
You know, where you can't just grab a ring flash and take a picture and that's it anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we improve that, right? So if we're just taking ring flash photography and it's straight documentation, you say that looks good, but then it's like, well, how do I get from there to something that I can actually present? You know, something I might want to put into a lecture, a journal, or something I might want to put on my website. And so there's lots of ways to do that. And so if you just have a ring flash, what you need to know is that's really flash harsh lighting. So it doesn't give me any dimension. It doesn't soften the light at all. And so they figured out a while ago that if you put your lights instead of on a ring flash on an extended bracket arm and shot in at angles, that you could create more dimensionality and change the shadowing a little bit. So that improved the look. But then we started using diffusers on those dual point flashes on the extended bracket arms. And what the diffusers did was soften the light. So now you'll see clinicians who are trying to take better pictures through for presentation using extended bracket arms, dual point flashes, and some type of diffuser. And one of the most popular diffusers people are buying now is a LumiQuest pocket bouncer for that purpose.
Okay.
So we're moving the lights out, we're bouncing the light, we're softening the light, and we're getting more of a three-dimensionality to the image and a softer light. And so it looks more flattering when you look at the picture.
Right. Now,
that's stage one, I would say. Mm-hmm. But stage two moves it further to more like a studio light, you know, like you see in studios. So you'll have studio strobes, and studio strobes enable you to diffuse the light even softer. So you could use large soft boxes, you could use umbrellas, octabanks, strip banks. I mean, we have just a wide range of diffusers to put on studio strobes that we don't have to put on those little speed lights. And so we can soften the light even more. And when you see pictures like that, you're like, whoa, man, what is that? And yeah, you want your patient to have that feeling when they land on your website.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, that's different, you know?
Yeah. And you're such a student of the game too. One of the things I've heard you teach about, you know, photography, the eyes are really crazy important in photography when it comes, because so many dentists get focused on the translucency. Like, and if the eyes are dead, it kills the whole photo. So you really got to be very conscious of what's happening in the entire photo. Because as a consumer, we look at the teeth and go, that's beautiful, but her eyes are telling me a different story.
Look at her eyes are saying she's not happy with her smile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her eyes say uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
So it's funny because I teach like this long lecture on portrait photography, which is, you know, it's about a 4-hour lecture. So second day, hands-on workshop with the studio lights. But I'll tell you, the best part of the lecture is the communication part. Because it's the part where you're actually relating with the patient and getting them to kind of open up for that picture. And there's some keys to that. You know, there's some tricks, if you will.
Give us your best tricks. I've heard this. Now, I've heard these. I won't say who said this, but sometimes people will get them in on a Friday and give them a glass of wine. But I'm sure you've learned, you know, having that rapport and that intimacy starts the process of just helping them relax. So what are some of your keys that you've learned?
Well, they mirror you. First of all, they mirror you. So if you're uncomfortable taking pictures because you don't feel like you're a photographer and you're trying to take somebody's picture, they're going to feel uncomfortable too, right? And so you have to be a little bit outgoing, talk a lot, you know, get them to laugh. Well, I mean, if you laugh a lot, they'll laugh, you know, so you smile, they smile. Or if you're uncomfortable, then, you know, they'll feel uncomfortable. So the first key I would say is that they mirror you, right? And so to make sure that you smile and you laugh and you're having a good time, because ultimately you want to take a picture of somebody who looks like they're having a good time, that would definitely be step one. Yeah. Now, if you're just trying to figure out how to pose somebody and you have no idea how you're supposed to pose somebody in taking a portrait, like, I totally understand. One of the things that you can do is if you look through magazines, you might see pictures of people who you like their poses, right? They could be doing something like their hands in their hair, the wind might be blowing their hair, or they have sunglasses on, or they're just posed in a certain way. I would tear those out. I would keep those, okay? Right. That way, if you have a portrait session coming up, you could refer back to that tear sheet album and say, I want to do this one with her because she kind of looks like that person. She also has the same hair. So just something to look at as far as like preparing yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I get this question too. What about makeup? Are you... when it comes to portrait photography, you guys use it. And again, we're at the end process, but, you know, people ask, how do you do makeup? Do you do makeup? Do you not do makeup when it comes to patients with portraits?
I am not a makeup artist, actually. No, okay. I don't. I don't give any special instructions for makeup. Let me tell you how I do a portrait session. Okay.
Please take us through that.
It totally makes it sound like I do like this big portrait thing. It's like, it's portrait day, everybody. It's not like that. I tried that before. If you set a separate appointment up for portraits, a lot of patients don't come.
Now, why? Why?
Dude, because they didn't have their Botox done. Or they didn't get their hair done, or something came up. You know, if something comes up, they'll miss the portrait session. So, you know what I mean? It's like one of those appointments that's not, is it mandatory? You know, do I really have to go? Or maybe they're a little too uncomfortable and their first thought would be like, I don't think I want to do a portrait session. And so they may not come. So the way I set up for portrait sessions is I always do it at the patient's post-op.
Okay.
And the patient has to come back for a post-op, right?
Right.
You put in a set of veneers, crowns, whatever. The patient, you need to see that patient in 1, maybe 2 weeks at most for that post-op. Okay. if somebody doesn't come back for a post-op, it means either they are really, really happy or really, really mad, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to see them for the post-op. And then I set the expectation then that I'm going to check you, you know, make sure that you're totally happy with your smile. That's the first thing we're going to do. Okay. Right. I usually don't do that in the treatment room. I usually do that on a couch. I usually come out and say, how's it going? Are you totally thrilled? You know, I just want to make sure they're happy. If they have any reservations about their smile, it's not photo shoot time.
Right. Right.
Yeah. We address the concerns, but if they're totally happy, the first thing that I do is take them back to the photo studio. I say, let's go get those pictures taken now. We let them know that we were going to take our pictures at the last visit. What I normally tell somebody is after we put in their veneers is I tell them that, you know, I've adjusted your occlusion. I feel really comfortable with it, but you've been open for like 4 hours. So I don't think I can trust it. So What I want to do is make sure that you stay on a fish pasta diet for the next week or so until you get back for your post-op. Once I see you for your post-op, it's all systems go. You can eat whatever you want, right? Wow. And so when we use that verbiage, everybody comes back for their post-op and it gives us the opportunity to address the occlusion, address any concerns they might have, but also see them in the photo studio.
Yeah, that's awesome. How long is your post-op?
It depends like how much adjustment I have to do, but the photo studio session is like 5 minutes, 6 minutes.
Oh, okay. I mean,
it's like super fast.
Really? Super okay.
Fast. Yeah. And What it does is, you know, we sit them in the stool. First, I take their after pictures, right? Like I took their pre-ops. I'm going to take their post-ops. Once I get those shots done that I really feel like I need to take, then I go and I take some fun shots, you know, like I'll back up a little bit. I'll do some vertical, some horizontal shots. You know, what I do first is I just start posing them, you know, like I pose everybody the same and I just kind of see what happens. I'll teach you the posing.
Please.
All right. You want to know the posing? Okay. Here's the posing. All right. Good. Okay. You get to use your hand, which is kind of fun. When I was a kid and Star Wars came out, you know what I mean? I love that movie Star Wars, right? And so one of my most upsetting things in my life that I just had to get over because there's just no way around it is the day I realized that I wasn't a Jedi. You know what I mean? Did you have that day?
No. What do you mean? I learned that right away. Yeah.
I would daydream about it. But the problem is like, I'd be like laying on my bed and I wouldn't want to get out of bed. You know, I just want to flick off the light switch. I would do that thing, you know, and it didn't work. And I was like disappointed. But in portrait photography, you get to be a Jedi again because you get to use your hands to direct the patient around. And so if you can see my hands, I'm like doing like this Jedi thing, right? And so the first thing I do is if they're sitting on a stool, I take my hand and I point down to their knees down here. I say, go ahead and turn your knees towards the light. So I have a light over 45 degrees from them. They turn their knees to the light. And I bring my hand back up and I say, now turn your head back to me. And they turn their head back to me. And it's like this Jedi thing. You know what I mean? It's like, they're not the droids you're looking for kind of thing. So they look back and then I have them turn their head. And they're literally turn. Yeah, I'll do it with you, Kirk. Ready? Good. Yeah, there you go. And now the other one. Good. Yeah, that's perfect. Right. That's perfect.
Well, it's easy to follow your lead. I mean, you know, you're using the same, you're using one instrument to kind of guide all of the actions instead of trying to describe it. So.
Yeah, this is good. Wait, Kirk, I want to do this again. I want to do the Jedi Force to you again. Okay, ready? Here comes my hand at you, right?
Okay.
That's it, Kirk. That's it. Right. Good. Look at that. I'm controlling Kirk through the computer. This is so cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're going to mirror the image, which is what you're talking about. So that's key. That's very key.
That's key. And then I'll have them lean in. If they lean in, you know, it elongates the neck, you know, and you get a kind of different angle on it. And then, you know, I just start taking some pictures, man. You don't want to have a patient just say yes or have a patient just smile. Sorry. Yep. If they just smile, it looks frozen. So you have a patient say yes. You know, if they're not just smiling because they're having a good time, have them say yes.
Right.
And if they say yes, it looks like a smile. But one of the keys to getting this is the key right here. You want a good portrait after picture. Tell them to laugh. All right. Tell them to laugh. And this is what they do. They go like this. I'm not going to laugh.
Yeah.
And you say, seriously, you got to laugh. Just give me a laugh. Okay. I'm going to take a picture. So they go, ha, ha, ha. Mm-hmm. And that's a terrible laugh. That's not a good laugh. I need you to laugh so loud that Liz, my hygienist, can hear you laughing in the next room. Mm-hmm. And they think about it and they do this loud belly laugh, right? That sounds really awful. And
right.
They're so stupid, they laugh. Like they always laugh. So don't take a picture of the fake laugh. Take a picture of the real laugh. So
the real laugh that happens. Yeah. And it probably happens right after the fake laugh, right?
Be ready. Be ready. Because if you take a picture of the fake laugh, you're not going to be ready to take a picture of the real laugh.
Yeah. Now, I want to go back to this because what you're teaching is so powerful now. And go back to the new patient process real quick, because when you're in the new patient process and you go to your monitor, every dentist has a couple go-to things, like the go-to shot, the go-to question. you know, it's one of the places you feel comfortable going with the patient. What are some of your go-to questions? Because sometimes when you're showing those photos, you don't want to go into a dissertation. Let me show you what I see. Let me show you. I mean, you want to get the patient taught. One of the keys to photography is you got to get the patient talking, right?
Oh, yeah.
So how do you do that? What are some of your comfort zones with the patient once you put up that image? Because, and the other thing I want to say, Jason, this is not something you put up that image. How big is your screen back there? Like how big is it? 55 like
52 inches or something.
Yeah. They don't go, man, that's awesome. That's
awesome.
Do they say that every time? They're like, that is fantastic.
No, they say the opposite of that.
What do they say?
They say, oh my gosh, I didn't know it looked that bad.
Right. And what do? You go, yeah, that is bad. Did you say that?
Yeah, every time.
You don't do that. So what do you do in that whole moment where you're putting up that photo?
Before you put pictures of somebody in front of them and start tearing up their teeth, I think the first thing that you're doing is getting emotionally connected with that patient, understanding what they're there for. That doesn't stop you from talking about the entire smile and what you can do to improve for them, but it gives you the things that are most relevant to them so that you use those as the hot buttons in the topic that you're talking about. Anytime somebody comes to you to go to the dentist, you know, they don't want to go to the dentist. They are afraid it's going to hurt. They're worried about how much it's going to cost. You know, there's just a lot of factors going on in somebody's brain when they're finally sitting in a seat across from you. Right. So that would tell you before you start talking about their teeth, the first thing you need to do is talk about how their teeth affect them.
So what is the question that you ask them?
The first question I would ask is, when did you first notice this? When did you first notice what your concern is? You know, Right. Because whatever they're thinking about that moment, it's going to take them back to a moment in their history where, you know, get some thinking back and thinking, oh, when did I first notice it? And they'll probably have a specific occasion. You know, right. It was a couple years ago and maybe one of their children said something to them. Maybe it was something about them looking in the mirror, you know. And so if they don't get right to the point of what it was, you can say, what were you doing when you noticed it? Because those are typically not good feelings that they had. And it gets them back in touch with those feelings about why they were here. And, you know, you want to find out what they've tried. And you want to find out how it's affected them. And I think one of the hardest questions for us to ask as dentists is to ask somebody how their smile has affected them or how that problem has affected them. Yeah. But if you ask that question, you'll be pretty shocked at, you know, some of the answers that you get from your patients. Let them do the talking.
Yeah, because most of the time you're going to get a story, right? They're going to tell you a deep, heartfelt story. And that story becomes one of the most important pieces of diagnosis, I think. I mean, we could talk all day long about clitto, but really 50% of the reason people probably do dentistry in your practice is their story behind it, you know, because you can say all you want about occlusion, aesthetics, but really they're going to do it for their own reasons, not yours.
Right, right. You're going to tell them they're destroying their teeth. You're going to tell them all this stuff and why they need to have this done, but ultimately they're going to get it done because of their story. And every patient has a story. And even though I may take great pictures and great videos to show patients, I would never show pictures and videos of patients without telling their story.
Right.
Because it's the story of how it was affecting them and how they overcame it, you know, and how happy they were with the results is what sells the next person on wanting to get their smile done. People ask me about imaging. What imaging do you use? How do you show patients what their smile is going to look like? I don't do that. I don't show them, you know, imaging of, you know, some computer generated thing of where their teeth are going to look. Mm-hmm. I show them somebody like them who had similar reservations. And I tell them their story and I show them the results and I talk about, or we talk about, or the patient talks about how happy they were with those results. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to the pictures of the patient who's currently in your office. And we talk about how we can do that for them.
I think that's powerful.
It's a good way to go about it.
That's why you're so good. And that's so key. If you're watching this, because it's very easy to get tied up in the technical thing, but your ability to learn people's stories and then share stories and you become the advocate for helping people overcome things, that's when you really become the hero in this whole thing. And I'll just go off on a tangent on stories. Like last night we were watching The Voice. My family loves The Voice. It's not because of the singing. It's that you see a little girl come in without any shoes on and you go, oh my gosh, this little girl, she has no shoes. And you're like, oh my gosh, sing good little girl. You know, and you want her to do well because of the story, it's the emotion behind it. And that's powerful, buddy. That's awesome. What are some of the other things you do when you're in the new patient process and you're using photography? What are some of the other keys that you've learned?
Yeah. So, I mean, we talked about a little bit about not using pictures, but when it goes to using pictures and we start actually showing their pictures in front of them, we go back to those concerns that they had where you can say like, you look at the teeth and the smile, you say, I understand what you're talking about. Like you don't show your teeth anymore when you smile. Well, that's when I'll pull out a little bit of science when I'm talking, because it's not just emotion. I want them to understand that I know a lot about the smile design process. So we'll talk about, yeah, you know what? Typically a person of your age shows 3 to 4 millimeters of their front teeth when they're talking, and you don't show any. So I can understand why, you know, you're concerned there. And ultimately that ages and matures the face. And since you certainly don't want to look older than you are now, you know, we probably want to add a little length. And then, you know, we may look at the retracted views, and I'll look at the pictures. I'll say, well, look at the wear that's going on here. There's a lot of stuff going on and we should address. And, you know, we may see that. You may get it a little deeper, say, well, it looks like, you know, we can't just lengthen the teeth here because the teeth have to be proper proportions. I may talk a little bit about the details with them, but I keep coming back to, you know, why they're there in the first place. So,
yeah.
So it's just a mix of, you know, I try not to get overly detailed with people because they'll just kind of glaze over. And I look for that look and then I stop.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So. And a lot of times, you know, too, this is an important part of photography, and you mentioned it already, but when you have such a catalog of how you've done this in the past, you can think of another patient and let the patient know they're not in an isolated situation. I do this all the time. I had a school teacher come in 2 years ago. She had no money, same questions, you know, same concerns, and you've already received the permission from the school teacher to show the story. And so It builds a lot of credibility as you being the expert for what they really want.
Yeah. So there's definitely an evolution of how we show those pictures and talk about those stories. I mean, it used to be just like, let me open up this folder, let me show you some pictures. And now it's like, let me show you some pictures, some videos. But currently now, all my cases, as I do my casework, I just don't save them in folders anymore. I put them in the Keynote files or PowerPoint files. And so like I would put like a header slide, which would be like the patient's smile or a headshot with their name, you know, or maybe a little bit about their concern. The second slide might be actually a video of the patient saying, hey, I'm so-and-so, and I want to get my smile improved because of this, this, and this, you know. And then the next slide would be like a full face picture and a repose picture, a profile picture, a Facebook picture. And so it's all in a Keynote, right? Mm-hmm. And the Keynote enables me to keep all my pictures and videos together in one spot. Mm-hmm. And it allows me to do the design process in Keynote, right? My laboratory prescriptions in Keynote. And then when I'm done, I put my post-op pictures and my post-op videos or testimonials as well into Keynote. And I've got it all right there. Now imagine that you're somebody who comes into my practice and you have a similar concern as somebody on a Keynote file. Mm-hmm. So instead of me just opening up a folder, I open up their Keynote. I say, this is so-and-so. This is why she came in. This is her video. Hi, I'm so-and-so. I came in because I have a similar problem as you have right now. And then we go through the pictures and this is what we did. And I usually hide the preparation slides. And then we go to their final results and you got the before and after next to each other. And I say, by the way, before we cement them in, we're going to put them in with try-in paste. We're going to take pictures of the before and after next to each other before we cement them in to make sure you love them. We would never put them in without you saying that you absolutely love them. Sometimes you have to send them back. And so we go through the whole spiel, right? And then they see the before and afters post-op, you know, in the photo studio pictures are there. And then a nice video testimonial. Instead of just going, oh, let me show you this picture, it's like a whole series of pictures for that patient. So it's more continuity.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I haven't heard anybody say that yet, because most dentists, they do all this and they've got the videos in this folder. Then they've got pre-ops here, post-op. And so they're scattered all over the place. And you could watch a dentist fumble while they're looking for all these. You just open up the file and you can go to any one of those slides. And the cool thing on Keynote's crazy. Your kids could manipulate those particular slides. It's so easy to use them if you're going to put a patient's name or anything like that on there. That is brilliant, buddy.
Yeah, you can just drag and drop. Yep.
Now, I got to ask you too, this is the advanced part of it. How are you using the video? Do you do all your video in the 5D? And how are you doing that in the new patient process? And what are some of the keys that you've learned in using video? Because that's not easy to do.
No, you know, videos are kind of a separate beast than portrait photography or clinical photography, because you're not using studio strobes or flashes. You're using continuous light, right? So you have to be able to understand how to use your ambient light, which is like your overhead lights, or you have to bring in continuous lights to constantly light somebody, if that makes sense, right?
Right.
And
it does.
So you have to either purchase special lights or something to illuminate the patient better for better video, or you use your ambient light, which is just your surrounding light. And sometimes that's not bright enough. Right. Mm-hmm. So you want to have a good light source. Maybe it's your window, or maybe you bring in a special light for video, but you got to have something that lights up the patient a little bit better. You don't have to. I mean, you can use your iPhone, do whatever. You know, I'm just talking about the highest quality video, you know, for presentation purposes. In my studio, just so you know how I do it, I have studio strobes that I light the patient with when I take a picture. Inside of those studio strobes, they're soft boxes. Inside the soft boxes, I have model bulbs. Now, the modeling bulbs are specifically strong for that purpose. So I actually turn my modeling bulbs up all the way, and it gives you a nice continuous light source for the front of the patient. So here and here are the soft boxes. When I turn on the modeling bulb, the light hits the patient from both sides and they get this really pretty light for the video. I come in with the camera right here and I shoot right through those soft boxes. And so that gives me a real, real nice light source to shoot with. And the newer the camera, the better it is at shooting video. So we have the 5D Mark III. It's a little bit of a challenge to shoot video in some ways. The autofocus in video mode isn't working, right? So we have to manually focus in video mode, which is a challenge for us. If you get like a D7200 or an 80D, those two cameras that I mentioned before, they'll autofocus in video mode. So it's even more like a camcorder, right? Wow. And so that's what we want, right? We want to be able to shoot things like it's a camcorder, right? So just turn it on and it's good. And so the newer cameras like the 80D is more like a camcorder.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, again, the question, are you doing video on every single new patient? Is that just part of your process, your protocol, your checklist, or are you selectively doing video?
I selectively do video. Now I'm going to do the video for my smile design cases, for my aesthetic cases. Yeah, not for every new patient.
Okay, sounds good. Now, I also get this question a lot too. Setting up a photo studio, people think it's got to cost like hundreds of thousands of dollars, but you could do a really simple photo studio for a couple hundred bucks, or you can go all the way and do it advanced. Like, give us some feedback or some thoughts on that.
So people, they want to know, what do I do to get nicer portrait pictures? You know, what's the simplest thing first, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the first thing that you can do to get a nice picture of somebody is get a clean, non-distracting background. That's probably number one, right?
Right.
So it doesn't look like they're in a dental office and they're certainly not laying down in a dental chair.
Right.
Please get the patient out of the dental chair to take their picture. It's one of my pet peeves, man. You take the before picture of somebody in a dental chair, right? And then you did a great case and then you get them out of the dental chair and you send them to glamour shots or something like that. So you get the before pictures in the dental chair and the after pictures in glamour shots. It's like, man, you know, you got to have continuity in those before and after pictures for display. People don't want to see people in a dental chair. So you got to understand that every single case you do is going to be so good, so stinking good that you're going to want to have a perfect before picture, right?
Right.
That's why we got to look at those before pictures. Because if you don't get them out of the dental chair for the before picture and you send them to glamour shots for the after picture, it almost sends the message that you weren't expecting it to be good in my book. Okay.
Right.
So you just got to understand that every picture, every pre-op picture also needs to look really good. First step, clean, non-distracting background. What do you do? You can just grab a sheet, man. Just grab like a black shirt. You know, tape it to the wall, because when you take a picture, you can't tell it's a shirt, right?
Right.
Use a black sheet, black shirt, blue, you know, is cool. Gray is actually kind of current, a little bit cool right now, like a dark gray, you know, or medium gray. You could paint a wall gray. The first thing that I did was I actually took an old t-shirt. I wrapped it around a canvas that I got in an art store. I stapled it to the canvas and it was like a backdrop for somebody. You could just carry it, put it behind somebody's head, take a picture, hang it on the wall. Okay. Mm-hmm. So clean, non-distracting background. Number two is you got to change the light.
Okay.
All right. So if you're shooting with your ring flash, it's not going to be a real pretty picture. Now, it's our ring flashes are made for macro photography. It's not the same kind of ring flash they use for fashion photography. That's a bigger, stronger ring flash. Ours is like this little guy. You take a picture with it and it's going to look really harsh. Right? It's not a real pretty picture. So we got to change the light source. So the first thing you can do to change the light source, the easiest thing is to get a different kind of speed light. You know, those speed lights that kind of sit on the top of cameras and kind of point up.
Yep.
You see them, wedding photographers use them a lot. That would be the first step to getting a nicer, nice, more flattering light source. Get one of those speed lights. You can put it on top of the camera. You can put it on a tripod. Step two is get something to diffuse the light. So once you have your speed light, which isn't cheap, right? Speed lights may cost you up to like $850 because they're speed lights, but they're very simple to use. Mm-hmm. You put something on the top of it, a diffuser, something called a Gary Fong is easy to put on. You just Velcro it on. When you take a picture with it, it's more diffused. You can shoot through an umbrella with it. You can even get a softbox for a speed light if you want to take it to that degree, but at least you're changing your light source.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
That's awesome.
A lot of information about speed lights, right? And you just don't shoot speed lights right at somebody. You want to bounce them off the ceiling or off walls because that's what spreads and softens the light. So the speed lights are always pointing up. They're never pointing at somebody.
Right. Right. Yeah. This is awesome. And then what mistakes, you know, if I'm a young dentist, I'm going to do, what mistakes can I expect? What are some of the mistakes that you learned or pitfalls that are on the road ahead of you to do what you're talking about, to do more restorative dentistry and incorporate photography?
Yeah. You know, just getting into more photography. I mean, photography is great because if it's a trial and error process, no tooth dies, you know, nobody dies. So photography is something as a skill, you can get really good at it and not hurt anybody.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, so just practice it. I think there's an apprehension to taking the pictures because they don't understand how a camera works. And so the first couple hours of my day and a half lecture, we talk about how the camera works. So it's not such a mystery to people. You know, you can, right. you could take your camera off automatic, you know what I mean? And shoot in other modes and get a more creative picture taken if you want to take a picture. But that's one thing. But the other thing too, with aesthetic dentistry is that you're going to have the failures. You're going to want to educate yourself. But I see a lot of people educating themselves, but they're not doing it, you know, in the office as much as they could because of their confidence level, you know, because that confidence translates to enthusiasm. And I think your patient can really tell whether or not you're enthusiastic about doing your cases, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it really does stem from confidence. But when you're first starting out with your aesthetic dentistry, I would say that consider this education. Lower your fees to do your smile designs. Just lower your fees, man. Stop trying to sell it at the top cost for doing a veneer. You see the perfect case you want to do. The person could really use it. They got a great story. They sign the model releases. They're going to let you show their before and after pictures. Drop the price, man. $800 a tooth. I don't care. Just pay for it, man. Just pay for it. It's education, and you're just going to start building your portfolio.
Right.
And so super important.
Yeah. And you need the experience. Like when we started doing video, we had Chris Savage from Wistia come out, and he's like, I'm just going to give you advice. Start crappy. Like you're so worried about getting it right. It's going to be bad when you start, but don't stay there. You know, every time you take a photo, every time you talk to a person, it's just going to get easier and easier and easier. And that's what you found. And I do agree with you because through the repetition, the confidence and the enthusiasm, that's what patients want. They need to look at a clinician and go, you really know what you're doing. You go, yes, you're in good hands. I do this all the time, you know? So you got to start somewhere. That is awesome.
Yeah. Now, it's like, you can't wait to improve somebody's smile, Kurt. You can't wait to do it, man.
Absolutely.
You pat him on the back on the way out. Your man Lance is going to be awesome.
I have so many more questions I would ask you. Like we could talk for 2 hours on this whole thing because this is the future. And Jason, you're teaching this all the time. Tell us about your book. Like you wrote the book, The Naked Tooth. So I actually got that a while back. You guys gave it to me at the Florida Academy. It's fantastic. So
dude, you were awesome at that meeting. Let me just tell you something. You spoke for a whole day at the Florida Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry and we laughed, we cried. I mean, it was awesome. We had like a little huddle during the break and like my whole team's like crying. They're like, oh, you know, it's like this Kurt guy's making us cry. It's like, dude, this is crazy. But that was a really good presentation you did for us. Yeah.
Hey, thanks, man.
That's where we met.
Well, the point was at the end, I really appreciate the opportunity. I mean, but it was kind of nerve wracking because some of the top aesthetic dentists in the world were in that room. I was like, oh my gosh. And Bill Strupp, you got some incredible people there. And at the end, you gave me your book, Naked Tooth, which is fantastic. Tell them about your book. You wrote the book, Naked Tooth.
Yeah, I actually have one. I'm in my consult room. So I have one like right here. Okay. This is Naked Tooth right here. And you know, my wife's going to tell you that she wrote the book. Okay. She wrote the book.
You're a smart man and you're just going to,
she's listening right now. You did write this book. This is my wife's brainchild. Okay. Because what we wanted to do is create a book for consumers. And the purpose of the book was to help patients do the research because there's no specialty in cosmetic dentistry. Imagine how hard it is for a patient to improve their smile. If they're going to a dentist and they don't feel like the dentist is enthusiastic about smile design, meaning that they may not do it all the time. Well, they definitely want to improve their smile, but if they have to go look for another dentist, there's no specialty. So it's not like they're going to get a referral. So it's like, how do I leave my dentist who I have a long relationship with, go find another dentist who's going to be capable of doing my smile design? And then do I go back to my dentist? Do I stay where I am? I mean, how do I handle that whole procedure? And then if I am going to try and look for a cosmetic dentist, what am I looking for? Right. You know, because it's like, there's no regulations or you know, there's nothing in patients we feel like are just lost. So the purpose of the book was really just to help them do the research, what they're looking for. And then we talk about different procedures, what to expect from those procedures. So it just gives them a lot of information or educates them on smile design and cosmetic dentistry too.
Yeah. And I'm just telling you right now, just get it. It is fantastic. I still have it on my bookshelf. It is really, really well done. So congratulations to you and your wife. Now, the other thing you guys do, you guys are all over with your clinical mastery courses. And this isn't just about making beautiful teeth. I mean, you're putting it all together, the functional, the aesthetics. It's you and John Nosty, you know, dear friends. I mean, you got Lee Brady. You got some powerhouse people there. How does this work? Because you're going to cities, aren't you? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, we're traveling around, man. This is an awesome group of docs, man. I'm like humbled to be speaking with these doctors because they're all very, very well-spoken, excellent educators. And I learn a lot having the opportunity to travel with them and learn from them as they're speaking as well. And we are a group that travels around. So we don't have like a home base, so which is good and bad, you know, not to have a home base. You know, you have things come up. You're in a different city. You've never been to this hotel before. You know, it's all a new place. But it's kind of fun too, because, you know, you have things show up in crates kind of like a rock band that shows up. Everything's in a crate. And, you know, people show up and they start unpacking the crates and they set up the amps. And so it's kind of like a road show. It's a lot of fun, but we'll travel around the country. So we'll go to Dallas, Boston, Philadelphia, Las Vegas, Atlanta, Chicago, San Francisco, Seattle. So we've been to many parts of the country, and that's kind of our thing. We travel around because in these times, you know, it's tough a lot of times to bring your team to travel around. It gets very expensive. And so we try and bring our courses near you. And people want to know, how do I get involved with Clinical Mastery? Because we do teach a lot of courses, right? So usually the first course that people take with Clinical Mastery series is Ultimate Occlusion 1. Ultimate Occlusion 1, Mastering Functional Dentistry. It's like your basis for what we teach. You know, it's mainly, foundation is mainly in occlusion, but you'll get some aesthetic dentistry and some treatment planning and some, you know, joint diagnosis. You'll get some, you know, head and neck exam type of information. And so you get a lot of really good information. You learn how to prep and seat in that course as well. And then from that point, you determine, what's my track? Is it aesthetic? If it's aesthetic, then you may come to my anterior aesthetics course. You might go to my photography course. If it's implants, you might go to Lee's implant course. If it's more treatment planning, we have treatment planning courses. Or maybe you're going to stay in the occlusion track. You're going to go to occlusion 2 or occlusion 3. Or maybe you want to learn how to stage comprehensive treatments. You'll go to Dr. John Nosty's comprehensive dentistry course, where he does a full mouth rehabilitation on a live patient. Right. So there's a lot of different routes to go. Once you get into the first course, you kind of understand, or you talk to us, we'll help direct you.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so if you're watching this, we put a link into it. Jason's website, which is fantastic, is smilestylist.com, and then clinicalmasteryseries.com. Click on it and check it out. And they're usually 2-day courses. Are they 2-day courses or 3-day courses?
Most of them are 2-day courses. John Nosty's is 2 weekends.
Okay.
So because it's a full mouth, so you'll get 2 weekends on that course, but most of them are just a 2-day course.
That's awesome, brother.
Yeah.
Well, this is huge. I mean, if you're stuck as a restorative dentist or aesthetic dentist, one of the breakthroughs is helping people see what's possible. And that's for you and the patient's benefit. And it's a game changer. It's truly a game changer. So Jason, I'm so grateful you're on, buddy. We're going to do a couple of these and talk about a lot of different subjects, man. I want to dissect a lot of these. So if people have questions, they can reach out to you and ask these questions.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, reach out to me. So if you want to email me, you'd email me Jason@smilestylist.com.
Awesome.
Yeah. Buddy. So Jason@mywebsite.com, smilestylist.com. So email me. Yeah. And feel free, or contact me on Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah. He's on Facebook all the time. So if you're watching the show, do this, even if you're watching it live, or if you're watching it at another time where it's not live, please add your question in the feed. I'm going to ask Jason to give you the answer directly. This is so much fun, and ask a tough question. So please do that. So Jason, stay on for a second.
Okay.
I want to thank you guys for watching. I really appreciate it. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.